And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunas, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of Desna's path, James.
I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
Would you believe that I had been wanting to, like, put Desna's path into that, like, opening forever, and this is just the first time I've remembered to do it?
I mean, it fits. It fits really well.
Yeah, James. So we're here today. This is a series that, like, we did for Starfinder First Edition that James and I both really enjoyed. And we've been, like, looking for time to bring it back. But, like, there's always been a product to, like, talk about. And there are products coming. There will be stuff to talk about that we won't be doing a full set of classes in a row. But we had some downtime now. And James were like, and I were like, class review. Yeah. Before we get too started, James, you've heard about, like, all the stuff that's going on with Paizo, right? Like, this happened right around your vacation, so I don't really know how much you've heard.
I remember the layoff stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. For those who haven't heard, a whole bunch of Paizo employees got laid off, from what I've seen, in terms of, because, like, obviously we only know who got laid off based on who has said something publicly on, like, a social media outpost. And it looks like organized play got hit pretty hard, by what I'm counting. And we know that I've seen one confirmed Starfinder layoff. There might be a second. I'm not 100% sure. For those of you who don't know, this is related to the Diamond Publishing, the Diamond Warehouse. Distributors. Yeah. Where basically they were like holding a lot of Paizo's product in their warehouses. And there is some legal reason that why, when Diamond, like, decided they were bankrupt, that they were gonna, like, sell off a whole bunch of product that different third party publishers, smaller publishers like Paizo, were holding. And they're taking it to court, and it's been going on for like a year now. And unfortunately, that happened, like, I don't think they've ever said this, but when they started talking about it, it was like a month or two before Gen Con, which makes me think that there's probably a lot of Starfinder core rulebooks up in the air in that warehouse, debunkle. And I imagine that would have affected Gen Con. I'm kind of taking pieces and going, oh, maybe this is what fits. I don't really know anything for sure, but that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting. And it's sad. If you see any people on Paizo mentioning, hey, we could use a commission, we got laid off, if you got the means, I definitely recommend it. But I wanted to bring it up because it is news.
Yeah, per the blog post, it was Diamond Comics declared bankruptcy. Yeah. And Paizo gave their products to them on consignment, which is, for their words, meaning we get paid to ship products to their warehouse and only get paid when they're sold, which is a standard arrangement.
Yeah.
And when Diamond collapsed, the bank that Diamond owes put a lien on all the products, including nearly $10 million in Paizo inventory.
Yeah.
So that's up in legal purgatory, with Paizo having no say in this.
Yeah. So things are a little bit shaky right now, but hopefully, you know, we've got Gen Con coming. There is a new product. I believe it's the Absalom Center of the Universe book. Is that right, James?
I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that sounds right. I know TechCore got pushed back to Q4 this year, but, you know, hopefully we can see some good sales. If you got the means, I definitely recommend, you know, buying some Paizo stuff when you can. That's a good way to help out. Hopefully we can see these people get new positions, or hey, maybe we can, Paizo has a really good quarter, go buy 13 Omens or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they also recently just had a sale. I think it just ended.
Yeah. So keep your eyes posted on that too. There's usually a Gen Con sale.
Yeah. Also, Paizo products aren't very expensive.
It
doesn't take a lot to support Paizo.
One thing that Owen Casey Stevens always says online, and has said a couple of times back when he was one of the co-hosts of this show, is that tabletop role-playing game books in general are kind of heavily underpriced for what they are, which is highly technical, like, manuals for playing a game. And I feel we kind of see that. Yeah. But that's enough of the downer stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about the soldier now. right?
Yay, soldier.
Yeah, this is very fun. James and I chose to start with the soldier because when second edition was originally coming out, the soldier was the first class to get a field test, which was like a document that like showed fans what something in Starfinder was currently looking like. And James and I had some harsh words for that. So let's see how much the class has improved and what it looks like now and what it can do.
Yeah. Just going off base stuff that we kind of did in the initial review of the core rule book. I think we went over some of the classes. Constitution is your key attribute. And I believe in first edition it was strength or dex, right?
Yes.
Yep. So change there. They want you to be beefy. Hit points 10 plus your con modifier.
Yeah.
And you get some skills. You get intimidate plus 3 plus your int modifier. So yeah. Slightly more than the fighter in just money. I don't know.
Just that. A little. Yeah, it's they're both around the same area being low skill. One of the fun things to note about being a soldier is that 10 is kind of the maximum number of hit points per level you can get as a baseline from a class. And considering that con is your key attribute, you're probably going to have the most hit points at Starfinder imaginable. And even like when you compare to Pathfinder 2nd edition, the only class that has a similar array is the Guardian, which is a 10 hit point class that adds con for its key ability modifier. So in general, you are going to be like barbarian plus levels of hit points, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. You're trained in perception base. So that one's just there. You're expert in fortitude and will, trained in reflex, which I believe is also the same from 1E.
Yes.
Which is good. I like marshals that don't just drop their lunch at will saves.
Yeah, that's true.
And trained in simple, martial, unarmed, trained in all armor and unarmored, and trained in class DC, which I always hate that wording, but okay, I get it. I get what you're going for.
Yeah. Like, I imagine it's so that they can just refer to class DC as like a category.
And tempo, you know? And how it relates to it. I get it. I cannot like it and get it.
Oh, absolutely. I feel that way a lot about how second edition stuff is like laid out. Like, I don't know about you, but I kind of hate like having an ability that tells me a number goes up. I really preferred 3.5 and Pathfinder and Starfinders just having the table with the numbers on it. I don't want to have to read 12 abilities to know what my bonus is, but that's just me.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, it's fun. I get it. And eventually it'll become muscle memory. Muscle memory, recall memory. There we go.
Yeah, and I guess you read it once and then you write down the number on the sheet. I can, again, it's fine. It's not my preference, but you know, ultimately that's not something that I would hold against this class in any capacity.
Yeah. You get your standard attribute boost, your standard background and antithesis, and you get two abilities right off the bat. I think also fighting style, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You get four.
Yeah.
Four.
Well, you get a fair bit, yeah. Five. As James is now counting,
as I measure the result, and it changes.
Yeah, you get the suppressing fire ability, the primary target feature, the soldier fighting style feature, the walking armory feature, and you get a soldier bonus feat on top of that. It's like a good amount of stuff at level one.
Yeah, it's a fair amount of choices, and I feel like the choices for the soldier are, if not super significant, they really. Okay, I lied. I think they're significant. I was gonna say like some of them are just kind of like a dip into what you're doing, but there's a couple of them that really change how the characters play throughout the rest of the level. So I take that back. There's some very important first level choices here that is not the same with other classes.
Right. Now, you said it's not the same as other classes. I'm trying to think of what class is super different. What do you think? What are you thinking?
So a lot of classes will allow you to pick things like what type of magic you'll be using, what focus, whether it's like support or spells. Because there's two and a half ways that you interact with the game as a soldier, which is hitting things in melee or hitting things in ranged, and both of those things doing close combat. Choosing that determines how the rest of the build is going to go.
Yes.
It's super directly influenced. Maybe the Solarian, probably the Solarian, because they also get a choice like that. But
yeah,
it is more significant, I think, than at other classes at first level.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And the other thing that I think is really interesting is that the majority of those fighting styles, which is where you're going to choose whether you're ranged or melee, almost all of them are ranged. There's like one that's really devoted melee, and it's it's an important distinction that that exists, because most of the core features, the suppressing fire and primary target, they talk specifically about area ranged attacks. Like suppressing fire says when you make an attack with a weapon with the area trait, you use it in a manner that suppresses your targets, which causes them to gain, it's not quite a condition, but it's kind of a condition without using the word condition.
Yeah, right. I think they maybe use it in later parts where they call it the suppress condition.
Oh yeah, they do. They do. They say they're suppressed, so they call it the suppress condition later. So yeah, you're right. It's kind of like a soldier class specific condition.
It's a specific debuff. It's a specific pantsing they give you.
Exactly. And it's a good one, because it's a penalty to attack rolls and a penalty to speed. Now, granted, it's a circumstance penalty to attack and a status penalty to speed. So those penalties are not going to stack with other things that do circumstance penalties or status penalties. But like, if you have a soldier in the party, you can now go, oh, okay, this spell puts a status penalty to speed. Maybe I don't need this, because the soldier can do that for free all day, every day. You know what I mean?
Yep. As my time with more of second edition out of the playtest has taught me, a lot of the combat in this game is choosing who is going to debuff.
Yes.
Not necessarily absolutely. Who's going to hurt, but who's going to debuff.
Yes. And one of the things that's also very interesting, especially if you're playing like, one of the things I maybe, yeah. Let me take what I'm thought and let me massage it a little bit. One of the things that I find interesting is that, as obviously you and I, James, we've played a lot of Starfinder first edition. And in first edition, if you have like a Solarian and a soldier in the same party, they kind of overlap a lot, especially if you're like a melee soldier and a melee Solarian. Mm-hmm. They kind of occupy that same damage dealer area. But one of the things I like about the soldier redesign is that because the suppress condition is reducing enemies' speeds, this game is largely built around people running around, ducking for cover, hiding, moving into better positions. There's a lot of that. Like, because of how the math works, if you aren't taking cover against these range attacks, you're probably going to get a few bullet holes in you. And because the suppress condition penalizes speed, it means you can be a soldier, you can suppress your enemies, and then your Solarian buddy can run up, because they do a lot of melee stuff, and they can start attacking someone in melee a little bit easier. I don't know if you would agree with me, but I think that because the Solarian can switch very easily between melee and ranged with how their moat works without really needing any like options bought into it, I think the Solarian is a little bit better at melee than soldier, because the soldier needs a whole like subclass choice to really be good at it.
Yeah, I think they go for different things.
Yeah.
In general, the Solarian just doesn't do as many debuffs in general.
Yeah. And that's what I like about it, that the soldier feels like it complements the Solarian rather than competing with it. You know what I mean?
Complementing is, I think, a good word. Also, like Loving says in chat, suppressed prevents enemies fleeing as easily, which true.
Yeah. Yeah. They can't run. Their legs are suppressed.
Also, there's a fair amount of soldier feats, class. It's going to be so weird instead of just saying options. That do things to suppressed targets.
Yeah, and then one of the other things that's interesting, I'm going to make this comment now so we don't have to point this out in like the features as they level up. A lot of the soldier features that are not simple proficiency or a simple Temel increases, like trained to expert, expert to master, master to legendary, a lot of the things a soldier gets are essentially allowing you to use your constitution for things that constitution is not used for by default. Usually like replacing strength or charisma or agility. And it's, I think that's pretty cool. I don't know how you feel about it, James.
Yeah. I mean, if you've ever been next to somebody really big and built and buff, they don't need to be charismatic to be intimidating.
Yeah. 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 That's what the level 3 fearsome bulwark ability does. You can use con instead of charisma to intimidate or coerce or demoralize. And instead of your dexterity on athletics, which is like, I really like that. I think that letting your con be something important is cool. And I know that a lot of designers for Paizo are like, oh, stop swapping ability scores. It's bad. You know, you don't want everything to be on charisma like in first edition. But like, I think in little places where it makes sense for the class, it's really fun and cool.
Yeah. Also, the math in this game is so tight. Doing that doesn't inherently, it's worse, I think, more problem in like first edition.
I agree. Yeah. The math is very tight in this edition.
Yeah, so even if you're at like a plus one, you still only changed it by 5%.
Yeah, so it sounds like you want to talk about some of the cool feats that this class gets access to, because I feel like that is the bulk of any class.
Yeah, that is, to say the least.
Yes.
You're right. there's Whirlwind Swipe, which I, that's the one I've seen people have the most fun with immediately.
Yeah.
Which is basically letting you use your melee weapon as like the old Whirlwind Strike. So your weapon gains the area 5 foot burst on unwieldy traits until the end of the turn. If your weapon has reach, it gains a burst radius. The burst radius becomes the reach of the weapon. And area fire with the required weapon, you center it on an area, it hits a bunch of people. It's just fun. And that really expands the two-handed weapon there, because there's a fair amount of them that are unwieldy and probably don't benefit from primary target, like how area range weapons would.
My favorite part about Whirling Swipe is that it has to, from like from a logistics standpoint, it has to include the sentence "you're excluded from the burst" when it's talking about area fire, because how it works is that it does a 5 foot square, like a 5 foot area burst attack centered on you. And so if it did not say "you're excluded," you would actually stab yourself every time you activate it. So it's very funny. It's little design quirks like that that I really enjoy, because like obviously you write it correctly like this so in order to make it functional, but like the fact that you have to spell it out in the rules is very funny, and I love rules for that.
Eighth level, you get Run Hot, which allows you to area fire twice with a weapon, ignoring the unwieldy trait. That one's just cool. I just like that. I just think it's neat.
I'm a big fan of Fog of War at level 6, which is basically like your gun, you're firing it so often that the smoke that it, and like the soot from like firing those bullets like literally makes it so that like you leave a cloud of dust and smoke whenever you area fire or auto fire, because you just shot so many bullets, and it's enough to it's enough to make like as much smoke as like a fog cloud spell. It literally gives creatures the concealed condition in that area, and it's just so funny.
The soldier has some of the most video game and anime inspired things out of the core rulebook. And that is definitely one of them. One of those tropes of just keep firing and then the cloud of smoke moves. Rocket jumps included on here. Is rocket jump necessarily good? No, but it's fun.
I think it's very funny that there's an ability called Dance at level 10 where like you shoot that your gun at their feet, and that the cause of like it's like to make them dance, like again in an anime. Like, come on, dance for me.
Dance, partner.
And like, then there's just fun abilities like Bullet Hell, which is you fire your weapon in sustained burst to unleash like a deluge of bullets. When you auto fire area fire with your weapon, and then creatures that move through that area take a D4 damage just because you fired so many bullets in that area. Another good one is like you can tell that like they looked at like popular soldiers from like different media. Like Death Blossom is literally Reaper's Ultimate.
Yeah, also Fan the Hammer.
Yeah, that's Soldier 27's.
That's Soldier 27.
Oh, isn't that his name? No, Fan the Hammer is McCree.
Soldier 76.
I'm sorry. I'm done.
It's okay, Grant. It's okay, Grandpa. I know it's late.
Wait. Did they change? They changed McCree's name though. I'm saying it wrong now, right?
Did they? I haven't played Overwatch in 3 years.
Yeah, I think that the guy who like the McCree was named after turned out to be like a big creep, and so they changed it, the character's
Cassidy,
name.
Cassidy, that's it.
Yeah, Cassidy, that's it. He's Cassidy now. I heard that. But then you even have stuff like Rocket Jump. Doesn't Ashe do that in Overwatch, where she shoots the ground with her shotgun and she goes up?
No, well, Rocket Jump is usually referring to Quake. That's an old Quake technique.
That's fair.
It's an old one, but I think their most popular use of it in, oh god, now I'm old again, is in Team Fortress 2, because the soldier has a rocket launcher, and that was the way you'd access parts of the map you couldn't otherwise, and that was a very popular rocket jump.
Yeah, that's fair. So what do you think, James, if you were going to build a soldier, what would you build it with? What would you do?
Me unga bunga, me like big weapon, me you like me weapon. Like hitting with big weapon.
So you'd go the melee option, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm stupid and I like big hammers.
You're a simple man and you just want to be in someone's quarters nice and close.
Yeah, there's nothing like just having somebody not having an answer for you being in their face.
and Starfinder's kind of built assuming that like unless you're fighting a monster, they kind of won't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like that. Now, remind me, is there a feat in this that lets you have multiple fighting styles?
Multiple fighting styles? You eventually get multiple fighting styles as you progress.
Oh, okay. So that's part of the core class then. That's right.
Yeah. And then there's a hybrid technique, which is at 20th, so you'll never see it. But
you'll never see it.
That allows you 2 feats that take 2 action to use and use them as less than that action.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay.
So there's ways to combine that. Also, because of how the action economy is different, you can, as a melee, take weapons that have either or that are integrated into armor or on pieces or in one-handed that do have things like burst or area, and you can use them to do more crowd control stuff in between your melee, mm-hmm. just so that you're always doing something viable.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. I'm trying to figure out where you get that extra fighting style, because I could have swore there was one. It's not part of the core class. I just looked. I don't know. It's probably in the actual feat text. Now, for me, I feel like my favorite is Erudite. I am a big fan of just being able to talk with people, and being a soldier that's good at talking, kind of like a decorated war general, is really appealing to me. Mm-hmm. And then when that doesn't work, I can just shoot them with my gun. That's fine. I like how they all get an ability called Oppressive Presence, which is like an enemy within 60 feet is like gains the suppress condition just because you have so much riz. It reminds me of, like, you know, in JoJo where they go bada 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 bada, and then like the little like menace kanji pops up on the screen. Mm-hmm. Like that's essentially what Oppressive Presence is.
Mm-hmm. Just the aura. Oh. Alex's audio is gone. I hope mine isn't
gone. Am I back now?
You're back.
I hit, yeah, sorry.
I was like, this is weird. That derailed train is doing a number on you.
Yeah. For those who don't know, my hometown, there's a train that derailed and everything is shut down, so it's fine. We're okay for now. I don't know. I like that option. I think it's funny. And I also like that it kind of has a minor built-in taunt option, because if you use oppressive presence on someone and they hit you, it goes away. And so it's not a very big bonus penalty. I'm giving you a -1 and to your attack rolls and a -10 to your speed. So like, you might just want to power through that, but maybe you'll try to hit me. And I'm probably got the most hit points and the best armor out of everyone at the party, so that's fine. I'm just going to give you the disappointed parent look until you try to hit me. And then La Chancelada comes out, right? That's what it is.
Chancla. I don't know what Chancelada is, but I'm sure it's scary too.
Listen, it can't be as bad as the time I tried to say potpourri, right?
Oh, that was an all-time. I do not have the time, but I would love to go back and just make a supercut of Alex pronouncing things wrong. That would be like 6 minutes of entertainment.
Well, you know what? If you are listening at home and you can think of your favorite time that I've said things wrong, join us on No Direction Discord at nodirectionpodcast.com. Click on our Discord link and join us on Discord and send it to James. Maybe then with people pointing him to where all of my greatest mispronunciations are, we can we can put it together into one extremely great take. And it's got to end with me screaming at the last hot sauce we did at the hot sauce challenge, I think.
Those were such great screens. I rewatched that relatively recently. I don't know why, but that was fun. You did really good on that.
I tried my best. Anybody who knows me in person, I have a sweet tooth, and so I don't handle spice well. I don't know if those two things are related, but like, I prefer like tastes that are very like, they're very sweet and they're very like, yay. And I did good on the first ones, and then we got to that one and I put the whole chip in the horrible hot sauce and put that whole chip on my tongue. And then it was 15 minutes of us just screaming on screen.
It was like 3 minutes of us screaming on screen and then like 12 minutes of me vamping with you intermittently coming in to scream.
Yeah.
I still have some of the gross one. The bomb. I still have that because I cooked.
Oh my god. Really? It's good after all this time?
It's not good, but it's not actually like a hot sauce. It's an ingredient.
Oh, so okay.
Its original use was to add to chili. It's like a chili cook-off thing because it's liquid smoke and stuff like that.
Did I ever tell you what happened on that episode? I did die, but I told my parents and my brother that I was going to do this challenge, and they all tuned in to No Direction to watch me suffer. And we're literally in another room in our house, laughing their butts off as I was in pain. Like, there's one part, if you watch the live video on YouTube, mm-hmm. where, like, out of nowhere, like, I'm sitting down and, like, suddenly I have, like, an ice cream bar. That's mm-hmm. because they're watching me die on camera downstairs, and someone thought to bring me an ice cream bar, and they just threw it at my head in the middle of the show. It's a very good episode. I digress. We should go back to the soldier who is probably slaying the hot sauce right now.
Yeah. You got anchoring impacts also at 10, which
yeah.
Reduces when you suppress a target one of your attacks, you increase the speed penalty to a minus 20 for the duration of the suppress condition. If the effect that imparted it was a crit, or the target critically fails its save, it becomes suppressed. It fails its save. From one of the ways, then they also become stunned one, and that's a 10th level. That's usable. That's powerful and usable. 20 yeah. feet is great. 25 feet is the base movement. You are.
Yeah.
There's another one that makes things difficult terrain. You can functionally make somebody stuck in difficult Forever. Terrain. Yeah, you just put difficult terrain there and made him a 5 foot move speed.
Yeah, yeah, I
you're,
agree.
You're stuck. You're. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, I really like the ones that let you add like different actions to your area on a fire, like not literally but figuratively, like shoving shot basically says when you shoot them they have to make a fortitude save against your class DC or you push them back, right? And that's essentially adding a shove to the gun. It's just not literally the shove action. I think that there's just a lot of places like that where, like, can you imagine, like, okay, my area is difficult terrain, you are suppressed for 20 feet, and I'm going to move you 20 feet every turn towards the human blender that is my party Solarian.
Yeah, in Cosmic Birthday, that's what Lauren, she played a soldier. That was yeah. what her build ended up doing. She, you know, we only got to level 3. and it was more based around, like, grappling and doing the melee part of it. But yeah, it was just, you are now here, and now you're here, and you're not hurting anybody in the party.
But here's the real question. Was Lauren a Viking?
No, she was one of the dog people, but also was blind.
Okay.
Which was great, because every question was, how do I see that? I'm like, I don't know. You smell a vent above you. I don't know. This is your supernatural ability. You tell me.
Oh. She wasn't a Shuni. She was a Vlaka then.
Yeah, Vlaka, yeah. It's like, okay. I didn't make this ability. Girl, you got to figure out how you figure. I give you the information. You notice yeah. this. You hear it. You smell it. You have echolocation. I don't know. You've been here before.
That's funny. You actually, your hearing is so good that it's Daredevil radar, but it actually looks like one of those like 1980s Tron games inside your head when you're detecting things. It's fun. Yeah,
totally. It's just whatever stops this line of inquiry. Just go embarrass that man. You're fighting somebody. You know where he is. Just embarrass him.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that I feel like the majority of play is below 20th level. So that's kind of where you got to look at to see if a class is strong. Like the capstones are fun, but you can't really look that too high ahead. Yeah,
I would refine that and say most of the play time in 2E is below 12th level.
Oh, definitely. Even in society play, where I don't even think they go higher than 9th anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's like in Starfinder First Edition, there was some stuff that took you past 12. You could yeah. realistically play stuff around 14 to 16, and there was stuff supported for that. 2E is just a different game.
Yeah.
That's the meta critique that I have of just 2E. It's just they write a lot of abilities for stuff that you're probably not going to see.
Yeah.
Unless but you specifically go out to do it.
But something you could see is the 6th level over offensive defensive option, which I think is really funny because you essentially have like a force shield, which... In first edition, force shields were like the things you put on your chest and you slapped them and they gave you like a temporary hit point. Now force shield is like a proper shield. And this option lets you overcharge a shield to do an area attack with your shield. Very funny. Just a 5 foot burst, excluding yourself, centered on you. Oh, it feels like almost like, God. Doesn't Reinhardt have an ability where like he could just kind of like knock everybody away from him a short distance?
His hammer just does that.
Yeah, it feels like that. It feels like, oh, I've got my ability and I'm going to knock you around. It's obviously not part of your kit, like your weapon swing, like it is for Reinhardt's hammer, but it's definitely just like, hey, I don't want you here. Go away.
Yeah. Give me some room. Back up.
Yeah. I think it's funny. It feels like an ability you would use more against like aliens than against like people, because most people will be like, oh yeah, I'm not next to you anymore. I'm going to leave and shoot you again. But if you're like surrounded by little guys, like you're surrounded by the swarm, you're going to want to go get them all away.
Yeah. Also, just like if you're faster than your opponents, you can just get behind them or into inconvenient places and stop them from taking better cover.
Yo, real talk, I love being an inconvenience when I play a melee character to people. It's very fun.
There, nothing gives me the same satisfaction as finding the exact point on a map that any enemy wanted to 5 foot step to and they can't now.
Yeah.
It feels like you've just won a game of chess.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm ahead of you. Now, have you had a chance to look at any of Starfinder's archetypes for consideration for the soldier?
I have not. I'm aware that there's an archetype system. I haven't dealt with it because my players haven't dealt with it so far, and I've been kind of working at their speed.
So just for a brief rundown then for James, archetypes in Starfinder is basically like you have a dedication feat, which is a initial entry level feat that you have to qualify for before you can take the rest of the feats in the archetype. Once you take a dedication feat, you typically need to take two other feats in that archetype before you can take another archetype. And unless you're playing with the free archetype optional rule, you have to spend your class feats to pick these feats up. So these are instead of things your soldier can do.
Most people play with the bonus archetype though, right?
Yeah, the majority of, like, unless you're doing society play, the majority of players who use archetypes play with the free archetype rule. Oh. It's a very good.
I thought Pathfinder 2nd edition had free archetypes for society. Am I wrong?
I don't think they do. I know that it's been a commonly requested rule.
Oh, okay.
It has not been made it a big sign so far.
Okay.
But as someone who has played free archetype, I'm a free archetype or dyer. Like I personally think that archetypes make the game more fun, because you could definitely like cheese the archetype system and combine a bunch of martial class archetypes together, because like archetypes are also how you multi-class in 2nd edition. Mm-hmm. So you could definitely like be, I'm going to be a fighter and I'm going to take the ranger option. Now, every time I get this, I'm going to get a bonus. And like those tend to be the broken options, especially like the bonus hit point ones. But when you're a soldier and you're just like grabbing a cool, flavorful world archetype, it's not going to be a big deal. Like, and in terms of archetypes that are going to be fun and flavorful that aren't a big deal, I feel like a soldier with the Knight of Galarian dedication is a pretty cool option. Now, you basically get to pick you basically pick all swords as if they were you treat them all as martial weapons. You treat martial weapon swords as simple weapons and simple and advanced ones as martial weapons. It basically knocks you down a rank. It also will like give you like the crit specializations and stuff, and it gives you some like bonuses related to Galarian. Like you get a lore skill related to either Galarian or one of its cultures, and like you can have goblin lore, halfling lore, Galarian lore, Iamadei lore, whichever one you want. Mm-hmm. And then from there, everything you get is just like, I want to be a space marine who runs into melee is what this archetype is, right? So you've got like your cool shield ability, you've got your sword. All of them are named after Iamadei, because in the Starfinder setting, Iamadei is like the protector of Absalom and humanity, and like is associated with like being like the last woman standing from Galarian, kind of a thing, where everybody else has moved on to like future endeavors. She's like, no, this is what I am. I'm truth and justice, and we will defend the memory of Galarian and stuff. So all the options are pretty cool. They're based around, it's kind of like Paladin Light is what it is. Or I guess in 2nd edition, it's Champion Light. You get stuff like, oh, I can slay demons, devils, dragons, and undead better. I have a shield that will basically give me additional hit points. I have a helmet that causes my, that can let me just like, when I'm affected by a mental effect, I can shrug off of it easier. It's just a fun archetype that's very flavorful and has some really practical combat benefits, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, sounds like a good fit.
Yeah. But the nice thing about archetypes in this game is that unless you want that specific theme or that specific fighting style or whatever, you typically don't need them to play a functional character, which I feel in 1st edition, there are a lot of classes that don't feel good without archetypes.
Yeah, and I think in Pathfinder, or sorry, Starfinder First Edition, a lot of the archetypes torpedoed what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they just took all of your best features and were like, nah, you can't have that.
You can't have these other things. They're not nearly as good unless you're in this one specific Denny's on a Wednesday afternoon.
Yes.
I mean, I played them. They're fine, I guess. But you have to account for you lose top flight.
Yeah.
It seems in this system, you don't lose your top flight power. You just kind of get a little wider.
Yeah, especially if you play the free archetype rule. And like I said, the nice thing about free archetype is that in general, free archetype doesn't really take away any power from your character, but it doesn't add a ton of vertical power. It makes you more flexible. Like, yeah. Dustin and I play a game that he runs where my rogue has an archetype that gives him a bunch of, like, minor spells that he can cast each day. And so, like, we've had fights where it's like, oh man, our healer is down. It's a good thing that my spell gives me, like, a really limited healing so I can get that person back up. But I'm still a rogue. I'm still gonna stab you and do lots of damage. And having that extra spell doesn't really make me a better rogue. It just gives me something horizontal that I can do in a bad situation, you know?
Yeah, I think that's your the direction for most archetypes. It's really... It should be too wide in your power or give you a specialization, not just make you top flight better.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how you're feeling about this episode, but I'm feeling like the soldier is a very simple class with, like, I mean, it's good. It's strong, I think, but I don't know how much more there is to say about it. We kind of were like, yo, you get a weapon, you penalize people, you make them sad. Have fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is totally fine. It is a base class to get into. I think it is one of the higher... This is going to sound really elitist, jerky. It's got to be one of your higher skill cap classes.
Yeah.
Because a lot of how good you are with this, or how good your party meshes with this class, is based on your ability to predict what is going to happen in a combat.
Yes.
And making sure that you're in the right position. If you are a soldier who is out of position all the time, you are going to be... you're going to eat more resources than you save.
Yes. You have to know when to pop out of hiding and use the suppress condition so your allies can get in. Like, it's very much in its own way, it's more of a battlefield control class than it is a, like,
top flight damage class.
Rock'em sock'em damage class. Yeah, top flight damage class. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think that in general, if you are looking at this class, you have to think to yourself, am I prepared to assess the battlefield and use my abilities to hinder my opponents so my allies can get in there and do the real damage, right?
Yeah. Am I willing to talk to my party members ahead of a turn to formulate a plan?
Yes. And oftentimes, because you are the one who has a lot of those battlefield warping penalty inducing abilities, and compared to someone like the Witch Warper who has to spend a limited resource like focus points to do a lot of their cool stuff, as a soldier, as long as you've got bullets, you've got the suppressed condition.
Yeah, so, and you have the hit points to take risks.
Yeah, and I honestly think that's one of the underrated things about the melee soldier that doesn't get talked about enough. Yeah, they can't put that condition in as wide of an area, but two-handed weapons don't generally take charges or batteries. So you can literally keep people in the difficult terrain heck all day.
Yeah, and if they do, the charge system makes it so they're active for a lot longer than regular shooting.
Yeah, so... those are kind of the things you have to think about when you're going to play a soldier. This isn't a fighter in the sense where fight man goes and he hits and then he does lots of damage. If you want that, that's probably more of an operative, or it's more of a Solarian, I would say.
Yeah, you're much more Reinhardt coded than you are like Genji coded or something like that.
Yeah.
I just remember the playtest version of this class and being so disappointed that it didn't have a workable melee spec.
Yeah. And now it does. They listened.
I'm very impressed. I like it. I've had players play them, and they've had a good time, and they've been willing to make plans, and they've been less happy when they showed up to a plan.
Yeah, that's fair. That's valid, though. So I'm thinking that out of 10 stars, what would you rate the soldier, you think, in terms of?
Sure. 9 stars. I like it.
Yeah, 9. I think in terms of, like, flexibility, I think it's probably, like, a a six or a seven or eight for me. It's not, it doesn't do a lot. It does these battlefield stuff and it's got a little bit of damage, but if you're looking for more than that, it's not very flexible. In terms of survivability and resiliency, that's 10 out of 10. I don't think you're going to find a single class out of both systems that can take a beating better than this class. And then I think in terms of like how fun its actual game plan is, I think putting a condition on people with your major ability and then watching all of your allies take advantage of it reminds me of, it's almost like an inverse envoy where the envoy wants to buff people. This is like, I'm just going to make you worse. And I think there's something really satisfying about looking at the GM's dice and knowing like, oh, they would have crit me if they rolled one higher. Too bad you were suppressed. How does it feel, GM? How does it feel to know that you didn't get to do the thing because of me?
No. That's for that. Also that like you have the hit points to stand up and be a menace for a long time.
Yeah.
Like I'm playing a mesmerist in Savage Tides for Pathfinder First Edition. Yeah. And I am just scared to death that something's going to look at me.
Right? And then you'll drop over dead.
I mean, like I have like 112 hit points. That's really great at 15th level. you know, you got a 14 con, you got to do what you got to do. But it's a lot of debuffs. And this is kind of the inverse of that, where it's slightly less debuffs than a mesmerist, but you survive people looking at you.
Yeah, you survive people really well, and it's a debuff that's valid, because one of the nice things about Starfinder is that a lot of those abilities that like would have originally been a saving throw are now do like spell attack rolls, and the suppress condition works on spell attack rolls. Now, granted, if someone throws a grenade at you, you're not going to have a lot to do unless you have, I think there's a soldier option that lets you jump on the grenade. But,
oh, yeah, there's something that lets you take like reflex saves from people and stuff.
Yeah. But unless you're willing to do something like that, like saving throws are not the thing that you are really well equipped to deal with for other people. For you, you've got good fortitude and will. And well, your reflex might not be great, but that's fine. You have the hit points, and most reflex saves deal hit point damage. So like, it's fine. You're just going to stand there and take it.
Yeah, also hit point damage is the most survivable form of damage.
Yeah. It is definitely the most survivable form of damage. Nobody wants to be doomed 5 with the wounded 3 condition or whatever.
Yeah, when you end up like Butters, you ever watch that episode of South Park where Butters gets a ninja star in his eye?
Yeah.
where you're just like dragged along, just you kind of just wish you did take, you know, just let me die.
That was our entire party in book 3 of Reign of Winter. Yeah.
Yep.
Where everybody had like multiple negative levels because everything that entire dungeon was essentially, here's a debuff encounter, then here's a bruiser encounter, then here's another debuff encounter, and then here's another bruiser encounter.
Yeah. And I was your frontliner as a swashbuckler, and I was blind.
You were blind so much.
I was a blind swashbuckler who was a Damphir, so I couldn't get healed.
Oh, that game.
We made it.
We did. We survived. Now, I would say if you survived this episode, you may want to come and listen to us at nodirectionpodcast.com, which I already plugged earlier, but I'm going to plug it again because
double plug.
I can.
Double plug.
So when you're there, you can join into the Starfinder 2E chat. You can ask James or me anything you want to talk about 2E. We have people who chat. I think we got a bunch of people who are a little bit timid about like chattering, but we'll get there. I'm hopeful we'll get there.
Just a little time.
So as you notice, today is not our typical day recording. If you're watching us live, we're here on a Tuesday when we've been traditionally doing Mondays. We have some like stuff going on over the summer and possibly beyond that is going to affect like the date. Like, for example, I am not going to be home quite a bit over the summer. So James and I are still figuring out schedules and stuff. So bear with us as we figure out our episode schedule for the month of July and or August. And, you know, we'll, as always, we'll be there to go beyond you because we're no direction. Oh, I did that really.